freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Mark, Matt, Marcus, sorry about just
Mike. Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Heward, not exactly Joe Capp there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
All right, final hour of the Brock and Salk show today. Just 1 week before the NFL draft, which means, Brock, we have, what, six of these left to go? Are you doing one on next Thursday?
I don't think I'll do one next Thursday.
Okay, so
I think
we have five left Wednesday. To go. Yes. So just the top five. That's all we've got left. All right. I love it. So who do you have for me today? Give me another draft profile.
The Seattle Seahawks select.
This is Brock Heward's draft profile.
You want traits? Check. You want a vocal leader? Check.
At the end of the day, you have to say, okay, what's best for the organization?
Can you make people around you better? And can you bring people together?
Every day at 9 a.m. leading up to the draft.
Yeah, today I've got the lone quarterback that I'm going to profile in this draft, and it's not J.J. McCarthy, and it's not Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels or Drake May. And some of those guys, Salk, I wouldn't even, if the Seahawks had the fifth pick in this draft or fourth, fifth pick like they did last year, I don't know. Some of those guys I wouldn't be super comfortable with taking even at four or five or whatever. This is the last of my five that will be outside the first round, at least by some accounts. From a talent perspective outside the first round. The next four guys I profile from here forward are all possible Seahawk first round picks. If Michael Penix watches his name not called next Thursday and they go through all 32 and the Seahawks trade down and they add a little more of an arsenal into the second and third round and Michael Penix is sitting there day two, I would love the Seahawks to go up and get him. Maybe a pick 33. And you see that often. If you don't see guys go, and obviously the most famous of all is Lamar in Baltimore, where Mike McDonald was when they went out with Ozzie Newsome and got him at 32. I think that fifth-year option stuff is way, way overblown. I think if a guy can play and you see it, they're going to pay him before you ever get to that fifth-year option and going to redo the deal anyway. So if Michael Penix watches his name not called on day one, you will hear me on the show Friday morning say, go get Michael Penix. Because Michael Penix does what every one of these other guys I've profiled does. He makes people around him better. Dude was 25-3. 25-3 coming off of the Jimmy Lake debacle. They were bad. They're a four-win team.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, a lot of pieces were a part of it. Kalen DeBoer right at the top of it. Ryan Grubb and everybody else. But he elevated Rome Odunze. He elevated Jalen. He elevated Roger Rosengart. He elevated everybody around him to being 25-3. The strongest commentary yet that we have had. And it doesn't surprise me because Bruce Feldman got close to Michael Penix throughout his career, both in Indiana and in Seattle. When Bruce Feldman came on our show and said this, it resonated.
If I had the second pick of the draft and I needed a quarterback and Caleb is not there, I'd have a hard time saying no to Michael Penix because he made so many big time throws, and I get it. He had three terrific receivers and he had a really good offensive line. But I know this about him. I know he has battled through adversity and come through the other side. I know he is, you know, got an electric arm and he is not afraid. I go back to something Cam Cameron had once explained to me. He was like in the NFL and he was like basically standing like almost cheek to cheek with me. He was like, this is open. And in college, guys are wide open. You know?
Jaden Daniels guys at LSU, wide open. Caleb extending plays, running around like crazy. Michael Penix doesn't do that. He can't do that. But oftentimes guys were wide open. Compare and contrast Drake May and the talent around him and the people around him and the throws he made in the pocket to Michael Penix is not close. It's not close. And obviously, you heard Booger right there talk about JJ. There was not the volume of plays, not even close to Michael Penix. Give me cut number one. In the rainstorm, in a absolute downpour in Corvallis, didn't matter the weather, didn't matter the opponent. That spiral, that lefty spiral, cuts through.
Final minute now of the first half as Penix heaves it down into the end zone. Caught, touchdown, Odunze for the second time tonight.
Damon said it to me, and I'll give two quick anecdotes. Damon said it to me. Sam said it to me. Damon said it to me the first spring. He's like, bro, I've been around Marino, Bledsoe, Brady. I've not seen a dude throw the outcut like this guy can. This guy throws outcuts, and this is in college where the field is bigger, where you've got to have more horsepower than you do in the NFL. And this guy throws an out route and outcutting routes unlike anything I've seen, especially at the college level, but even compared to some of the best ever do at the NFL level. Secondly, talk to Sam after that spring when Michael Penix arrived. He's like, Uncle Brock, I've never seen this. Dude just single hitches and throws it 75 yards. Like, you know, most guys single hitch, throw it 60. You know, a good arm, you single hitch, you throw it 65. This guy just like single hitches and throws it 75 yards. He's just different. And kudos to him, man. He showed out through this whole interview process. Season ends, disappointingly, against Michigan. Worst game of the season against a really brutal team. And then he builds himself up, 6'2", 216. And then he goes to the combine and he wings it everywhere. And then he gets to his pro day sulk and he runs 4.5 and he jumps 37 inches and he reminds everybody, I am not a stiff. I may have two ACLs. I may have two shoulders. Three of my 4 years in Indiana may have ended short. Season's cut short because of injury. But the last 2 years, I've hardly been touched because I know how to play the game from the neck up. I know how to get the ball out. Third in the country in sacks allowed. Second in the country in sacks allowed. Like, just protecting himself. You know what was a really cool program back in the day? John Gruden's QB school. You know how fun this class would be? It started to run its course, right? It's just like anything. The first few years were amazing, and then all of a sudden it's kind of got a little tired, and then some of the classes weren't as good. Can you imagine this year, like in its prime, that program with John just grilling these guys, right? Just like, hey, man, look at the sheriff. You're going to go toe-to-toe with Manning, you know? How could you remember how Gruden would be? He was so good, though. And then they get on the field and be like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. And they get on the field and Gruden be like, I never seen this. I never heard of football like this. Right? And he'd be able to put more volume of plays that are absolute wow plays, a highlight reel, second only, honestly, to Caleb from a wow NFL throws. Penix is there. Penix is sitting in the second round, and the Seahawks have an opportunity. Trade next year's third. Trade next year's second. Go up and be aggressive and go get a guy that from day one would step into this system and be ahead of the curve.
All right. So I love it. Thank you. That is today's draft profile.
I could keep going for like 10
minutes.
Well,
I know you could, but I feel like I've got to step in here and
I could go for 30 more minutes.
Okay. So if you feel that good, why not at 16? If you truly believe he could be a franchise quarterback, why
would
you
wait? I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, that's a legitimate, you know, 50-50 proposition, if that, as Belichick was saying to McAfee.
But that's true of every quarterback, Brock, no matter what. If you have an opportunity to get a guy that you think's got that ability, why would you risk it? Why would you wait and see whether or not you
can
get him later?
Do I want Geno, Sam Howell, and Troy Fautanu at 16? Or do I want to trade out of that and, you know, miss the opportunity to get a bona fide Olin Krutz-esque, nasty, freaking difference maker in the interior to maybe the exterior of my offensive line? Do I want that, or do I want to take the risk of Penix?
If there is a franchise quarterback that you feel that strongly about, you got to take him. You just have to take him because somebody else will. This isn't a situation where you could wait until the third round for Russell Wilson. Someone's going to take Penix, probably in the first round.
We'll see.
Maybe at the very beginning of the second. So
there's
not
be
a
bunch
secret.
There's going to be a bunch of teams like Latu that look at the secret, that look at the injury and go, ain't doing it. There's going to be a bunch of them, and maybe Seattle's one of them because they know him better than anybody else, and they're just like, can't do it. The body just can't sustain. Not even from past injury, projecting ahead. The body just can't sustain.
I gotta tell you, I'm a little offended. Like, I don't usually get offended over things like this, but I am a little offended.
What?
I mean, I'm glad that Sam told you about it and Damon told you about it, but I can't believe you don't recognize the fact that I told you about this kid 2 years earlier. I mean, it's very rare that I know anything about what's going on in college football, but I said to you a good 2 years before that, hey, this Michael Penix guy is awesome. And then when he transferred here, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. He's amazing. And you were like, meh, hurt, injured,
Humpty Dumpty.
This and that,
Humpty Dumpty.
And I'm glad you threw all the credit at the other Hewards, Damon and Sam, but I'm a little surprised that, you know, there's not even a little bit.
The fourth Heward child?
I mean.
The Stumpy little one named Salt?
I'm just saying that I thought maybe Stumpy would get a little credit here. All right. Let me remind you all that Mariners turn ahead the clock night is coming up. So
because you're a stumpy little chump.
Shut up, passing. 90s night neon cap is coming up as well. Get ready to flip the clock. forward to T-Mobile Park on April 26th and 27th against the D-backs. Friday, the 26th, turn ahead the clock. Jersey night with the first 15,000 fans scoring the iconic sleeveless jersey. And then on Saturday, the Mariners are throwing it back with 90s night neon caps. Just make sure you're one of the first 10,000 fans through the gate, and you can have a look at me cap as well. All right, coming up, you can hang with Justin. It'll be sweet. We'll give you guys everything you need to know, and then we've got a fantastic ranked coming up at 10:45. Hey, it's all coming up on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it was a really, really nice series win for the Mariners, and then they topped it off, made it just a little better, a little sugar on top, and that was the sweep, which they got yesterday. And as usual, Brock, with this team, it's going to start with the pitching. Seven straight quality starts, three now in a row by Bryce Miller, who was lethal yesterday. Maybe didn't have his best stuff, but found a way anyway to get it done. Only allowed one hit. It was a home run, solo shot, De La Cruz. Other than that, he did everything fantastically well. What a fantastic game. And Scott Servais knows it's the pitching.
We are driven by our pitching staff and playing really good defense. And I think that's the thing that stood out for me here over the last probably week or so. We have played much cleaner baseball. I mean, starting, Julio's game last night was phenomenal in center field. Urias, Rojas at third base have done a really nice job picking things up there, and it really helps out your pitching when you're making those plays. And we weren't doing that the first 10 days of the season, and now we are, and our starters are getting a little bit deeper in the game, and everything just kind of rolls for us because of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the first 10 games saw the defense was some of the worst you'd ever seen. We've been spoiled by Gold Glovers and excellent defense, and that's probably why it stood out a little bit too. But the last 10 games or so, as the pitching's been picked up, Polanco's made some great plays, Rojas, Urias with a great play yesterday, Julio setting the tone in center field. So, yeah, nice to see all of that come together. I think the best point, though, of what you just said and is that Bryce didn't have his best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a year ago, that would have been messy. And a year ago, he didn't have a four-pitch arsenal. He didn't have other things to fall back on. It would have been probably one of those, four or five innings, give up four or five runs. Not the case. Went to the other tools in the tool bag he has this year and found a way to, once again, just execute in a lethal, lethal way.
Yeah, he sure did. Julio with a couple more hits. Another stolen base from Jonathan Class A, who's been a nice little spark. And Mitch Haniger with a good game as well. He has been on fire to start
this
season.
That's 8-game hitting streak, by the way.
I know. How about that? They scored 17 runs in the series. I mean, we're going to focus on the pitching for good reason. But they also, they scored some runs.
Some good signs offensively. I thought Julio, really good day. He's getting the rhythm back at the plate. You can see it. He smokes a couple doubles today. Really happy for Garver. Get that first home run out of the way for a guy who has struggled early on. But really credit our players. Coming off a rough weekend, we had a few meetings here on Monday. Players really understand where they're at, and we got to get better. And they made some adjustments here in this series, and it paid off.
They needed to have some meetings, and I'm glad to say it worked.
Like all of us who parent teenagers and young adults, we all say the same thing that Scott just said. Put your technology down. Put your iPad and your phone away and just go out and be present and real, okay? That's
You're
all
funny,
I want
man.
From you.
You are funny.
Funny how?
Here's the second
funny like a clown?
Yeah, mostly.
Funny like I amuse you?
Mostly
funny how?
Funny like a clown. Yeah, that's nice. How I think I would describe you. It was very clown-like. Also,
you'd be proud of me. Hold on. You'd be proud of me.
Why?
Because I taped a podcast I said with you yesterday with a comedian, and
Jeff
I nailed
Foxworthy.
It. And it wasn't awkward.
I thought you said you did it with a comedian.
You watch your mouth. You.
Too far.
Oh. Oh, that was.
Was that a low blow?
For.
Was that not right?
Uncalled
I'm
for.
I'm sorry. But you did well?
And so was the taking down of the images in the VMAC. What are they doing down there, Salk?
Well, they're taking all the images down from the Pete Carroll era and putting up new ones. For a new era here in Seattle, Leonard Williams explains why.
Just to create our own identity. Like I said, that's something that I loved about coming into the building and with the new coach. It just feels like a clean slate. It doesn't feel like we need to have pressure of trying to chase anything. It's almost like just put one foot in front of the other and create our own identity, create our own team, and something that we can be proud of, and something that, like, when these rookies that are about to get drafted, they come in and they know the standard when they get here. You know what I mean? We don't have to teach them it. They're going to see from how we carry ourselves and how we react with each other. You know, these rookies are going to know the standard when they come in.
Brock, does this stuff matter?
It does. We're going to come back to this, right? We're going to come back because I've got a bunch of questions. And I am really curious. And it feels like, Salk, since we started the show with this and you talked a little bit about it, were the expectations really too heavy? Was the comparison game too much? Was the weight of following in the footsteps of those legends?
Might have been.
Was that really the issue?
It might have been.
Was that really the challenge?
Okay, we got part of the challenge.
We got to dig into that in about 10 more minutes. Okay. And I'll share a story of watching that from my perspective 20-some years ago in a building where they, too, stripped stuff down and wasn't the most positive impact.
Okay, well, this is one story. It's not the biggest Seahawks story today. The biggest story is the potential visit of Rashad Penny, who could be coming back, Brock. On a veteran minimum kind of deal?
You're funny. You know what? You're funny.
I'm not funny.
No, you're funny like a clown.
I'm not. Why yes. wouldn't you want Rashad? I don't understand why you wouldn't
want
him. No,
you're funny like you amuse me funny.
I don't understand what possible problem you would have with bringing back Rashad Penny.
Because
Rashad
you were Penny the only no one who wants to see this happen.
No,
so you
obviously
can say,
John Schneider might want to see it happen.
See, redemption. See, I saw it all the way along.
Hey,
you guys gave up on him.
I'm not the one bringing him in for a visit. That
you
would be Seahawks general manager John Schneider. So
I never gave up on
him.
I was right.
Take it up with him.
Here's the third thing you need to
honestly
know.
We don't even really have a third thing that you need to know today. I've been playing the Greg Doyle sound with his creepy exchange with Caitlin Clark, and honestly, it's just that it's creepy and I really don't want to play it again. So I'll play you this. This is Bill Belichick talking about what he's going to be doing for the draft. He's going to be hanging out with who?
You and Paul
Pat McAfee.
Pat McAfee. Yes.
Yeah, well, sort of like what I've been doing, you know, watching the players, you know, specifically the ones that might be involved in our show. So the guys in the top, you know, top part of the draft. But the first round leads into the second round, and there's a lot of correlation there. So we'll talk about that next Thursday night. But yeah, just trying to do some preparation and you know, follow up. I watched a lot of these guys in the fall, and even some from last year when they were juniors. Or when they were under, they weren't coming out, but they were still factors in evaluating the players in the 23 draft. So it's just kind of an ongoing process, and yeah, it's fun to keep up with it.
Is Bill gonna be good at TV?
Of course. When Bill puts his mind to it, he's phenomenal. Seriously,
you say of course. Like Bill Walsh was not good for TV. There are a lot of guys that
but
are
Bill's
brilliant
done it before, and he
okay.
was great.
Top 100 NFL players thing on NFL Network.
He's brilliant.
He was good, yeah.
Yeah, when Bill wants to give you something, there's no one is better.
You know what you and him have in common, by the way? Many things. But do you know one thing that
we
came out yesterday?
Every time we speak?
Mm-mm. You and him both hate coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Great disdain for coffee.
Disgusting.
He's not a coffee drinker. No. He's a tea drinker like you.
Yeah, I've had 5 cups of tea already today.
Must be a Northeast thing.
Must be. Or maybe just those of us who know coffee's disgusting or can't seem to grow up or whatever. All right, that's everything you need to know. 7:15 every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. I know I want to drink coffee. I try every year. I make sure to try more of it. Right. I'm not opposed to the idea. I just can't seem to get my taste buds to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a cranky old coffee drinker. Trust me. Like, that's part of my life goal.
Right.
I just haven't been able to pull it off, which is kind of upsetting to me.
You'll
Thank you.
There.
I appreciate your confidence.
Keep
in
working.
It's nice.
Keep striving.
Me and Rashad, we're gonna work on it together. Yes. All right. You want to talk about this part? You really want to do this?
I do.
You really want to get into this?
Yeah, I got some questions.
All right. Well, I got answers. It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I don't think I'm ever going to hear Luda the same way again after the concert a couple of weeks ago. That was really a fun night. It is Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710CLSports.com. We'll rank here in just under 15 minutes. Brock, the big conversation in Seahawks world here a week from the draft has nothing to do with the draft, actually. It has to do with this decision made by the new head coach, Mike McDonald, to make some changes around the building and to cut out some of the odes to the past, specifically the Legion of Boom era and a lot of the pictures that were up of Jermaine Curse's catch and the tip and, of course, Marshawn's Beastquake and, you know, some of the famous moments. And now they're saying, hey, look, start your own legacy. You don't need to follow in the footsteps of that legacy. You need to start your own. You don't need to be the grandchildren of that team. You need to be your own group. Mm-hmm. And Leonard Williams, one who kind of led everybody into that world yesterday, told us all about it. And here's a little bit more from the Big Cat.
And I remember the first day we came into the team meeting, Mike pointed out that, you know, there's empty walls in the hallways and things like that. And, you know, for a person like me, I think that made me really excited, and I hope it made the rest of the guys excited, because, you know, we're obviously going to respect tradition and the history of the Seahawks, but I think it's given us like a clean foundation to like create whatever we want to be. We're not chasing to like be like any other team that's been here before. We want to create our own identity.
Mm-hmm. And I think those last four words are kind of the biggest of all of it. Create our own identity.
Exactly.
This is no shot on the past. This is no, fear of or insecurity of what Pete and the regime did before. No, this is about us creating our own identity moving forward. Mm-hmm. This isn't about ripping down the banners in the indoor facility of the Super Bowl and the names of all those players. It isn't taking down
or anything like that.
Yeah, or taking down all the placards. You know, I love it. I get a little, it's a little surreal, to be honest with you, especially doing this media thing now as long as I have. My media career is three times as long as my playing career was. And this will be, I think, my 18th year calling games. I got six in the NFL. And yet, next Thursday, Salk, when I walk in that other hallway that has all the players that have ever played for the Seahawks up on the wall, little kind of placard up there, you're like, man, that was really cool to be a part of it. Those aren't going down. That history is not going down. It is just these moments that, hey, man, we're going to make our own moments. It also tells me that, like, we're going to make our own moments. We're taking these down, not in a sign of disrespect, but to create our own identity and know that we're going to now put up our own pictures here on these hallways. I said to you, it was years ago, and I think it was when, and I better not mention names because I don't know this definitively, even though I'm very confident, but we had new leadership that came in place from the front office standpoint, and he decided to take down all the pictures in the hall, and it became a white, sterile, it looked like the Frankfurt airport. I mean, it was cold and there was no warmth. It was like the antithesis of what you wanted to do. So when practice ended, guess what? Guys wanted to get the heck out of there. It felt like a prison. Like, this is not fun. You know, and I don't know what the thought process necessarily in that occasion was, but like, hey, come on, man. Like, you need to have an environment that's inviting, that you want people to be there. And as you listen to Leonard, that last part's the most important. Create our own identity. Create our own identity. And this is not a disrespect factor to what Pete or in the insecurity factor to me at all.
Nope.
Of what the previous regime did. However,
I really like it.
However, I do have a question for you because you brought it up earlier, and that is the weight. Do you think as those guys walked under those pictures and, you know, the post LOB under Pete's, do you think they felt the weight of expectations of those former players and that in any way inhibited them or got in the way of them moving it forward?
Yeah.
You do?
I do.
There's a part of you that thinks that plays a role, huh?
Was it the primary reason? No, I don't think they had as much talent, and there were a bunch of different things that went wrong. I mean, like, that's not the reason. Do I think it was an effect? Yeah, I do, a little bit. I guess what I mean is I think we were, or at least I feel like I was, guilty of making too many comps to the past. And constantly trying to get everything to be like it was then.
Mm-hmm.
Is this person going to be like Cam Chancellor? Is this guy going to be like Earl Thomas? Can this running back be like Marshawn? Mm-hmm. Can they have the same sort of an offensive line personnel? Like, I feel like we went through a lot of that and constantly saying, is it going to be like this? Is it going to be like that? Rather than just saying, hey, maybe they're trying to build something new. It's hard to do when the coach doesn't change, right? It was the same coach. And so I think there's a pretty natural expectation that it would be just as things were.
Sure.
But I just keep going back, Brock, to what you and I did when we first came on the air. And we were the new show as opposed to the veteran show. And we were saying, hey, we're going to not talk about the past. I basically said if it happened before 2009, it didn't happen. Right. And, you know, obviously you would still tell stories about your time in Washington and with the Seahawks, et cetera. But for the most part, We didn't spend a lot of time reflecting back on the glory years or anything else with Mike Holmgren or the Mariners in 1995 or any of that stuff. We just said, hey, we're here about the present and the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at some point you and I, which is normal, did the same thing. Mm-hmm. We got caught up in the past a little bit, and I do think that was a challenge for the players.
Okay, how about that? How about
spending Not you and I doing it, but just everybody doing it.
How about spinning it this way? You left and had big shoes to fill. Right, I mean, you went into one of the biggest markets when you went back to Boston, and you had to follow a guy that had been entrenched there. Not too dissimilar that Mike McDonald's got big shoes to fill, and the most successful coach in the history of Seattle sports.
I'll tell you a story about that. And yes, this did absolutely come to my mind as I was thinking about the basketball hoop more than necessarily the pictures, but the basketball hoop. So. The guy who I followed in Boston's name is Glenn Ordway, the Big O, legendary radio host, essentially one of the greats, right? Mount Rushmore, certainly, and I say this with all respect to Glenn Ordway. He was fantastic, and they probably never should have fired him, and they never should have brought me in to replace him. There were a million other things they could have and should have done, but that's the way it went. So I get called in to replace Glenn Ordway. And Ordway's big thing that he did every day was called the Weiner Line. And he was great at it. I mean, it was his bit. Guys would call up. He had a whole crew of people that would call up every day. And they crank up the old Wiener Weiner line was his line. And every day, like, people would leave these messages pretending to be other people and making fun of everybody. It was a great bit.
Like voicemails for those in our market right now that are going, oh, yeah, and Barnes is nodding his head. Like voicemails with Gas and Gross.
Yeah, but funny. And so it was really good. Anyway, the I'm just kidding.
Theirs were funny, too.
I know. I'm just kidding.
That's your godfather.
I know.
Your parents,
I love the Gras and kids. I love Gas. I'm just kidding. Calm down.
Thank you. Jeez.
Sheesh. If it happened before 09, it didn't happen. Anyway, so we start doing this new show. I'm working with Michael Hawley, and they say, okay, well, you know, at the end of every show, you're going to do the Weiner line. I'm like, what? No, I'm not. They're like, yeah, you're going to do the Weiner line. I'm like, I can't do the Weiner line. It's not my bit. I'm like, no, we want you to do the Weiner line. And I had to do it for like the first, you want to know some of the reasons, not all the reasons. A lot of them are my fault. You want to know one of the many, many reasons that was a complete abject failure in Boston? For the first 5 months of the show, I was doing this guy's bit. Are you kidding me? It would be like asking Mike McDonald to come in every day and be like, always compete. Yeah, that's my slogan. Always compete. Yeah, I've been saying it for years. I always do always compete. No, you don't. That's Pete Carroll's. We all know it. Salk, you can't do the Weiner line. And every day I was like, guys, I never even really listened to this bit. Like, I don't even really know how it goes. I don't know any of the personalities. You're asking me literally to do someone else's bit. Think of how insane that is.
That is nuts.
Can you imagine if when they had hired Jimmy Fallon for the Tonight Show, they're like, okay, you're doing jaywalking. And he's like, literally, that's this guy's name. Like, no, you're doing jaywalking. Yeah, I do kind of a different thing. No, we want you to do jaywalking. That's the only way this works. It's preposterous to even think about. Finally, I was able to get them to at least change that. Yeah. And people miss it. And when Ordway came back, I think he probably brought it back. I'm not sure. I haven't heard. But he should have, because it was a great bit that he did himself.
Yep.
I couldn't do that bit. Were you crazy?
And that really is like the basketball hoop.
It is like the idea totally like of the trying hoop. To do a show with Glenn Ordway's bit staring me in the face, as somebody said earlier, like the eyes of Dr. DJ Eckelberg in The Great Gatsby, is hysterical. You couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of Mike McDonald standing up every day in front of the team with Pete's basketball hoop next to him.
Never going to happen.
It was never going to happen.
Yep.
Is this going too far in the other direction?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think it's in a similar vein. And you certainly hear the players buy in. And I think it would be cool to hear the very genesis of this. It'd be cool to hear where this kind of all started. Both with the hoop and the pictures. Right? Was this Mike McDonald? We know that he and John have been attached at the hip through this entire process, right? Even through the interview process and all of it at Dino's, and then late into the night at the facility, and then putting the staff together, and now all this draft. I mean, they have just been inseparable. It'd be fascinating to know, like, hey, what do you think? What do you think about what? What do you think about the hoop? You know, like, seriously, like the very...
Had to go. No chance. Could not keep it.
Do you think that was Mike McDonald?
Yes.
Right away.
Yes.
Like, hey, John, just let me know.
Of course. Like, I'm not Pete Carroll. I'm my own person.
Okay.
Maybe I'll do something else, but I'm not going to do his thing. And yet, Brock, I get this text from the 253. I think this is nuts, but I love that there's somebody out there that feels that way. You guys can feel any way you like. As a season ticket holder of 24 years, I now don't like Mike McDonald.
Oh, boy.
And I guess I just ask why. This isn't going to affect you. He's not tearing down images of Pete Carroll, like, at the stadium. They're not tearing down the Ring of Honor.
Tear down that wall.
They're not doing anything like that. They're just saying that they need to build their own legacy. So if he ends up winning and starting a completely different new legacy here, what, you're not going to like him because he took down some pictures?
Yeah. I think there's going to be some that do feel that way, that it's a disrespect to those players that achieved. Hey, go achieve something and then put your own pictures up. I think there could be a sentiment. I don't share that, but I think there could be a sentiment. Maybe the 253 does out there in Eatonville. That's like, hey, hold on a second, man. Remember, give some reverence to those guys. Those are huge moments. We never won a Super Bowl. We never been to two Super Bowls. We never had the swag. We never had the Hall of Fame. We never did any of this. Don't take those pictures down. Those guys accomplished that. And if you're scared to live up to them or the weight of their expectation, that's on you. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is some of that sentiment out there. Mm. I don't feel it. You don't feel it. Justin Amora, I'm going to guess you guys don't feel a ton of that either. But to some fans, like, hey, man, until you do something, until you have a Beastquake, until you win a playoff game, until you win a Super Bowl, why don't you keep up, you know, some of those just iconic moments?
And I guess you would say that you're not erasing them from anyone's memory. You're not ignoring them. You're just saying that it's time for these guys to put themselves up on that wall.
Yep.
And I like the sentiment. 206 says, sounds like he doesn't care about the history of the only semi-successful franchise in the city. I'm anti-McDonald after this news.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that I don't get it, but I appreciate the passion for it. I just I don't think he's saying the history means nothing. I think he's saying we want to create, or he's about the success of today. Mm-hmm. Mike McDonald is not going to succeed based on how Pete Carroll did 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He needs this team to succeed on its own merit. And this is one of the ways he's trying to push it into his image.
Yeah, and I think
you got to empower him to do that.
Yes, and if you listen to
Leonard. By the way, did you hate Pete Carroll when he changed the uniforms a year after coming here? Hey, it's time to change the uniforms.
Well, everybody hated those uniforms.
They were awesome. Oh, the old ones? Oh, my God, they were terrible. But like,
not the old ones, not the Moyers.
No, the Hasselbeck uniforms.
Yes.
Atrocious. But he came in and was just like, yeah, we're changing. It's new. Mm-hmm. We have to do something new. I know you had success under Mike Holmgren. I'm not Mike Holmgren. Mm-hmm. I'm Pete Carroll. We're going to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what Mike McDonald is trying to do. And this is just kind of a physical representation of that. All right. Good conversation. Good stuff. We'll see how it goes right now. Let's rank.
Got a list?
Let's do the one.
Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
Oh, man. Yeah, let's do the Weiner line. That's a great idea.
I've been asked to do other people's bids when I replace their show, and I was like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
Just straight up.
I didn't have a choice. I tried. I was like, they're like, well, it's sold. It's like the highest money making thing in this station. Good luck.
Okay.
Ugh. Thanks. Appreciate it.
It's hard.
I mean, I guess they're kind of doing that on Movin', but at least Brooke was there for it.
Totally. That's what I'm saying. Like,
that's tough.
Like redoing
bit,
phone press.
That's tough. It's tough. Tough thing to do. We're ranking streets today, Brock.
Can you imagine those that follow us all one day?
Trying to answer the question. Everyone else in the city already does a version.
Nah, I'm trying to do ranked.
Nobody else could do ranked. It's unique. It's its own brand of chaotic hilarity. We are ranking streets today. Some honorable mentions include...
What is this?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Ugh.
You don't know that?
Ugh.
Really?
You're
not a big horror guy.
H-O-R-R-O-R.
I'm not either, but I at least know the theme to
Nightmare. I never say that word quite right. H-O-R-R-O-R.
You're smart.
What?
I know. I don't like YouTube. Sorry. I'm just not a big U2 fan.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
If you saw it in the sphere like I did... It would be in the top five.
I wish I had.
They took all the streets. They took, like, it was a real, like, present moment, and then they slowly strip the streets away just to the desert. If you would have been there.
If only. Ugh. With former closer Houston Street.
That's
pretty good. Maybe Jason Street from Friday Night Lights. How about this one, Brock? Does this ring a bell? I know it will to a lot of people. Maybe not you. You know what that's the music from?
Ooh, that's a video game. That is.
Oh, maybe this will help.
Yeah. Oh, you can. Oh, you can.
Street Fighter 2.
Oh, you can.
When I think of that game, I was never good at that or Mortal Kombat or any of that stuff. But when I think of other friends playing it and stuff, all I think of is this.
Oh, you can.
That guy making that sound over and over again.
Oh, you can.
I mean, it sounds like are you can? I don't know. Insane. You're puking? I don't know. Who knows?
That's a Jerry DePoto-ism. Right?
Yeah.
Are you going to do that if you beat more in the race?
Scantha B Anthem. Are you can? Yes, that's what I'm going to do.
Scantha B Anthem.
Scantha B Anthem. You got Wolf of Wall Street, of course.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Streetcar Named Desire, 21 Jump Street, Street Trash, Street Outlaws, Miracle on 34th Street, Mean Streets with De Niro, Sing Street, which is an underrated movie you should see. Don't worry about it. Okay. We just are.
Uh-huh.
You got Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
There's just a couple of... A couple of streets you should know about, Brock. Nice. Here's the Doobie Brothers. There you go.
I just got a text from one Shannon Dreyer.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Where the streets have no name, darn well better be on the list.
I agree.
I don't know if she's going to be happy it was an honorable mention.
It's an honorable mention, Shannon. I totally agree with Shannon.
And by the way,
this man is unhinged, Shannon.
They say, I've heard it said that your adult movie name would be your middle name plus the street you grew up on.
Okay.
What would yours be?
Your My first name? Street I ever grew up on, Jeffrey K.
That's a good movie name.
Yeah.
Justin?
Tracy Park.
Yeah. I think that actually is an adult name.
Anthony Lake Desire.
Oh, whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Wow.
Anthony Lake Desire. I grew up on Lake Desire.
Wow.
Mine was Bristol.
Bristol. What's your middle name?
My middle name's Lee.
Lee Bristol?
Lee Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Bristol smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, for sure. By the pack.
Yeah. A little bit louder. Right there.
All right, Dope C is the most underappreciated rapper of his time. I love that guy.
Then why is it an honorable mention?
I don't know.
With Nate Dogg. Because not everybody knows it. He's underappreciated, as I said, but he's awesome. Huh. And then you've got people who are overappreciated.
Leave each other alone like
Bruce.
You're not going to do this, too.
Yeah, overappreciated. You know who else is overappreciated? I don't have the sound
you
of it
too.
Here.
You
but
too,
the Grateful Dead, Shakedown Street, overappreciated.
Not putting it in.
Not doing it. Now, originally, this was Martha and the Vandellas, redone by David Bowie and Mick Jagger.
Tokyo, South America, France, Germany, UK.
That's their Dancing in the Street version. Now, Van Halen did that as well. They did a good version of it.
Hmm.
Yep. We got a little Bon Jovi. Brock, this song's been in my head.
The lyrics of that song are insane.
Wild in the Street.
Something from the Boys Brigade going on a date with the girl next door.
That's funny. You got Streetlight Manifesto.
Oh, The Streets, the rapper.
The Streets, the rapper. Street of Dreams by Rainbow. Nightmare on My Street. DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. But I think it's time for the top five. Are you ready for the top five, Rob?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, I don't care whether people like this man or this song. I do. And this one's a little shout out to my dad who loves him. Little Bob Seger at number five.
Down that empty street. Down on Main Street.
Could really sing, huh? Just a vocalist.
You like
down
this one?
Down on Main Street.
Sure.
Down on Main Street, man.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Black Street's another good one. No diggity.
Man,
did you guys not put that on your list?
Yeah. It's on here just as an honorable mention. I forgot to say.
Do you even like sports?
Huh? Well, I got Houston Street and Jason Street.
What about Peekaboo?
Oh, Peekaboo Street. Forgot about her. That's a good one. Yeah, she was good.
Why the hate?
No hate.
You ever watched a Street Outlaw show?
No. Watched Homicide, Life on the Streets.
Number four.
Number four, the movie.
Lunch? You got to be kidding. Lunch is for wimps. Okay, Billy, I'll talk at you.
That is the original Wall Street. Gordon Gekko.
Oh, yeah.
Wall Street.
Uh-huh. You think you could have worked on Wall Street?
So? No, I do not. I think that is a lifestyle I would not want for anything in the world.
Not a question. Absolutely not. I take no for an answer. Immediately, yeah, I'm out.
Sounds awful.
Not happening.
So out. You?
I think the numbers side of it I could enjoy.
I don't think you'd be. I don't think you'd handle the personality side of it.
No.
The people
you like, authentic people.
Yeah. New Yorkers? Not for me.
Yeah.
All right. Number three. More Van Halen.
It's a pretty good one.
It is a good one.
Pretty good one.
We got a text from the 206. Six. Is this segment always about Mike and Justin's music taste? Sheesh. Yeah.
Mostly, yes.
Are you new here?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's about.
That's why I hate it.
Uh-huh. Well, bad taste. What are you going to do? Number three was Mean Streets, Van Halen. Number two. I know, maybe you're upset because Bruce didn't make it in, or maybe for you too, but not going to be ahead of the Rolling Stones.
Bruce even has the E Street Band.
True.
Jerry Rafferty,
Little
Baker
Stevie
Street.
Van Zandt. What did you say?
Did you say Baker Street already?
What's Baker Street?
Is it Jerry Rafferty?
I don't know that.
Is Rain kind of an homage to the Weiner line for Maura, so she can just whine about everything in this?
Yeah, this is my version.
253 says Maura's going to take Salk to the street when she beats him next week.
Interesting. Word on the street is that's not going to happen. Number one.
The Mean Streets.
Yeah, fishy, fishy, fishy. You know where that is, Brock.
Elm Street.
One of these things is not like the other. Which one is different? Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell which thing is not like the other? I'll tell you if it is so.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
What was
yes.
That?
Sesame Street.
That was not a very recognizable festival.
I mean, that was Big Bird singing One of These Things Is Not Like the Other, and it was Ernie doing Here Fishy, Fishy, Fishy.
Fishy, fishy, fishy.
That's not recognizable?
I guess it's been too long.
What about this one? Is that one recognizable?
No, yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah, Elmo would do that. After he fought Grover, you could hear Elmo yelling as he was doing his martial arts.
You guys love music so much. I thought you'd use the Sesame Street theme song.
Yeah, well, we have some other Sesame Street.
A lot of votes for Street Tacos. We didn't get those in.
Oh, yeah.
All you can. All right, we got to go.
The Backstreet Boys.
What? They stopped. There you go. All right, we're going to go. Bump and Stacy are up next. We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Till then, the hay is in the barn. See everybody.
Guys, it's a chopper!